about in the movies. We're looking at a movie today called Bitter Melon, and Margie Lee is here to present it to us. So let's give Margie a really warm welcome.
Before I start, I have a correction from last week. Kevin did such an awesome job with his presentation, Tuesdays with Maurice, and he said at the beginning that we all volunteered for this. I didn't volunteer. Please forgive me for sitting. I said I'd be so nervous that my legs were just going to give out, so they gave me a reasonable accommodation. But I did get some advice from a couple of Cedar Ridgers here about what to do if you're nervous. He's not here, but I got an advice from someone who said, don't worry about it, they don't listen on Sundays anyway. Raphael, if you're listening somewhere, Matthew wants to talk to you. I was also given another advice from someone. She said, just picture you all in your underwear. I think I've seen enough. Deb, Matthew wants to talk to you too. Bitter Melon is a dark comedy about a Filipino-American family guests celebrating Christmas over a long holiday weekend. I realize this movie might be too dark for some people, but I want to talk about how this movie affected me. Since we're all part of some sort of family, we all know that families come with baggage. And any time we try to sweep those things under the carpet, things don't go away, they just get worse. In the first few minutes of the movie, we're introduced to the main characters preparing for the arrival of relatives to the family home in San Francisco. The matriarch of the family is Prisa. The second of her three sons, Troy, lives with her along with his wife, Shelley, and their daughter, Mina, because he's been unemployed. The other two brothers, the oldest, Mo, who's coming from Philadelphia, and the youngest, Declan, is coming from Manhattan, and they're being picked up from the airport by their cousin, Tiva. Troy is often jealous, controlling, and a bully. During the first night of the family get-together, we see many signs of his abusive nature. We're going to show a couple of clips, and I hope you can pick up on some of these signs.
Tiva, what are you doing? Troy gets pissed if you ring the doorbell more than once.
Who the fuck is ringing the doorbell?
Sorry, we didn't know if anybody was home.
I'm just fucking with you, man. What's up, Deck?
I got the surround sound all calibrated, man.
It sounds like a movie theater in here now.
Nice.
Yeah, I'll put on the Lion King later. You'll see.
Declan!
Hi, Mom!
Merry Christmas, Anna!
Hi, Auntie Tiva!
Hi, Mina! Where can I put this?
I'll take it.
Hi, Uncle
Declan. Hi, Mina. Gosh, you're getting so tall.
Come look what I made.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What's that?
It's an ornament.
Oh, is that you?
Yeah.
And is that your dad?
No, that's you.
Oh, I love it, Mina. What is that?
It's the... You?
I like your drawings, Mina. You're a really good drawer.
Mina, what do you say?
Yeah, Mina, don't be rude.
Thank you.
What the fuck took you so long?
Hi, Shelley.
Merry Christmas, Declan.
Hey, Deck, you're hugging my wife a little passionately, man. You think this whole gay thing's fake?
Yeah, right.
Mom, I asked for green tea Kit Kats. This is a Clif Bar.
What are all the sweets doing out?
Oh, Mina told me to put all the sweets out.
I told her don't put it out, not until I get home.
Okay. I'm just doing what I was told.
It doesn't matter. I'm home now. I just didn't want Mina eating a bunch of sweets before I got home.
No rest for the weary, Shelley.
Uncle. Hey, Uncle. Look how many Pokemon I have.
Wow.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Tiva.
All I know is Pikachu.
How are you?
Where's Mo?
He's running late. He's still on the plane.
What?
Promises to be home, but doesn't make it. Looks like we know which one of us took after Dad.
Anybody heard from Dad?
Nobody's heard from him in years, right, babe?
Dak, you want a beer?
Sure. Why not?
Yeah.
It's a shame. Mina's never met her Lolo.
She doesn't need her Lolo, as long as she has her Lola. Right, Mina?
Yeah.
Mm, remember that.
Now, why are you putting all the sweets away?
Huh?
Your mother's deaf.
What?
Nothing. I'll get it myself.
Hey, Dak. You want to see my man cave? Check that.
Transfer?
Yeah, I want to transfer to SF State.
Hey, Shelly, can we turn the TV down a little bit?
You have to ask Troy if that's okay.
I have to ask Troy if it's okay to turn the TV down?
Mom, what time is everybody getting here?
6.
Okay, cool. That gives me some time. We got smoke. Shelly, you got my smokes?
Yeah, they're on the table.
Hey, Troy, can we turn the TV down a little bit?
What for? You got matches?
Oh, I thought you had your lighter.
You know my lighter died.
Oh, I thought you had your lighter.
So did you or did you not get matches?
No, sorry, babe.
Oh, what about that thing for barbecue?
What?
That thing for barbecue?
I heard you. You're just saying the same thing twice.
Yeah, the barbecue thing.
You mean the lighter? Yeah, I'm gonna have to use that now.
Troy, I actually have to go to the store. You want me to get you a lighter?
Dude, hold on. I can hardly hear you.
I said I'm heading down to the store anyway. You want me to get you a lighter?
Nah, man. Just relax. Finish your beer. What do you need at the store?
I have to get some gin for the cocktails I'm making tonight.
What, you don't think we got gin?
Oh, you have gin?
Dude, we have everything! This is a Santos house, man. You think we're not gonna be fully stocked? Shelly, show Deck the booze. Silly, you're always forgetting something.
Christmas Inang!
You look fat!
It's because of the camera that makes us look fat, Inang.
No, it's your fat that makes you look fat. Anya te oras yun dito, Amerika?
Inang, saan amin dito yung Amerika makasauti Ilocano, makatalos ni Ilocano? Iso nga ang sawak langan ng ting Ingles. Mabalin, Inang.
Okay, we speak English, my English love.
We just want to say how contented we are of our togetherness in the day of our Lord Jesus Christ. And it heartens me to the arrival of Mo and Declan visiting from the East Coast of the United States of America, talking to you, Inang, via the internet, with the help of this new technology called Skype. So that we can be all together again with the veritable cornucopia of food.
Especially mango cake.
Hold on, Troy. Let someone else do the talking for a moment. And we are blessed of these wonderful blessings bestowed upon us. With that, we'll just segue to this.
See? The trick is to have self-control and to know how far your arms extend. See my arms?
Okay, we have to go.
Alang nga, Rod. Yuliplipatan na kita yung balon nyo, ah.
Thank you, Manang.
Okay.
Come on, we're going to be late.
Where's Arya?
Be careful, honey.
What? There's no danger. You underestimate my precision.
Do something.
What do you want me to do?
Boy, please.
She likes it.
Troy.
Oh, so sweet.
Troy? Troy!
Look, Auntie Devi.
some of the signs. Now that Christmas dinner is over, everyone is off doing different things, and the next day, Shelley meets Tiva in a park where Tiva talks to Shelley about Troy.
I just had a couple drinks, but that's about it.
Trey got drunk.
Yeah, I saw.
I guess that's why we're here talking, right? To talk about Troy.
It's hard.
I guess to answer your question from last night, yeah, he hits me. One time I filed a temporary restraining order against him.
What happened?
He came back. I just made sure that we kept the blinds closed so the police wouldn't see him there.
What?
Yeah, it's like nothing ever happened. He just acted like we were all on his side.
What did Auntie Prisa do?
She just took him back in. Didn't even ask how I felt about it.
Shelley, I can take you to Allway. They help women like you. You do know you have options, right? Does he hit Mina?
I don't know.
If you need a place to stay, you can stay with me. Or if Mina needs a place to stay. But if you decide that you want to stay with Troy, I'll respect that too.
You will?
Yes.
Really?
Of course.
Because when I filed a temporary restraining order against him, no one seemed to respect me. Like I'd done something against the family or something. Prisa would ask me how I was doing physically, but she just kept talking about how worried she was about Troy. Your mom wouldn't even talk to her about it.
My mom's a no-drama kind of
woman. Her own sister?
I didn't know. I'm sorry.
And then when it would come up, it was this annoyance, like I was some whiny bitch with thin skin. And you know what? They convinced me that I was. Nothing was the same for me. Like, I'd done something wrong, and everybody wanted me to know it.
No, you didn't do anything wrong.
So when he came back, everybody acted like it was normal. Hey, Troy. How's it going, Troy? Have you eaten, Troy? The only person I could talk to about it was my daughter, and she didn't even know what was going on. So you want to respect me? When I turn Troy into the police and he comes back and kills me, will your respect save me? What good will your respect do me? What good is anything in this fucked up world? Here's your casserole dish. I tried to wash it, but it just crusted it up all over. You just have to let it soak overnight in hot water.
This isn't even mine.
Has anybody heard from...
Meanwhile, Declan goes shopping with his mother. He wants to know about the abuse that has been going on. He wants to know where his father is. His mother pretends that all is fine and tells him that she has an idea where he is. He might be back in the Philippines, she tells him. Instead of the togetherness the mother wanted over the holidays, the brothers go off to see their old friends the next evening. While they're out of the house, Troy interrogates Shelley about where she was all day and about the card that Tiva gave her as a place to seek help. There's a scene in the movie where Troy starts to hit Shelley, which I'm not going to show, because it might be triggering. Troy's mom takes the granddaughter, Mina, into a bedroom and shuts the door. Mina wants her grandmother to call the police, but she tells Mina to be quiet. She tells Mina if they call the police, they'll take her father away. When the other two brothers come back for the night, they catch Troy hitting Shelley, and they're obviously concerned. Mo wants to take her to the hospital, and Declan wants to get her a hotel room for the night, but Shelley tells them no. As the scene closes, the family sort of seemingly sweeps what just happened under the carpet.
What are you doing?
Stay here, Anna. You'll be safe here.
Call the police!
What the fuck are you gonna do without me? What the fuck are you gonna do without me?
Boy, easy, man!
Fuck you, Mom!
That's enough!
You hitting Shelley, ma'am?
Mind your own business, Mo!
Shelly, are you okay? Shelly, do you need a hospital? I'm called to you, and I'll come right back.
No.
Seriously, she's probably just around the corner. I can have her
call her! Mom. It's alright, Mina.
Want me to get you a hotel? Shelly, I can do it right now.
It's fine, Declan, thank you.
Shelly, you can stay in my room tonight. I'll sleep on the couch.
Why didn't you just call the police?
Mina, do you really want to lose your father? Think of what you're asking for.
Shelly, I won't call Tiva, but we can take the car if you want to go to the hospital.
It's fine, Mo. Thank you.
Mom, you need ice for your lip.
I'm fine, Mina.
Come on. Come on. Take my room.
Thank you, Anna.
Mom, can I sleep in your room? I don't want to be alone tonight.
Of course you can, sweetie.
You guys, go to sleep now.
What's going to happen now?
You're going to sleep now. That's what's going to happen. Come on.
All right.
Yeah, let's go to bed.
Mom, are you all right?
I'm fine. I just need to sleep. I'll see you in the morning.
Mom, why don't you sleep in my room? I'll take the couch.
No. I'm okay, Anna.
Come on. Let her get situated.
Yeah, okay. Night, Mom.
Night, Mom.
Good night, guys.
Choose this movie. I'm the middle of three sisters. My oldest sister was verbally and physically abusive to my mother. I'm gonna call her E. She was never the nicest person and a big sister that I wanted. She was a bully at home and at school. E and her friends would beat up the smaller kids for their lunch money. Yeah, I saw them do it. And I was scared they'd do it to me, and they did. We're 80s latchkey kids. We were home after school. She would lock us in the basement until our parents got home, which was usually around 11 p.m. My parents ran a restaurant, so it was often very late before we were let out. In our culture, we were expected to stay home until we got married. I couldn't wait to move out soon after college. I always dreaded coming home for the holidays. I would call my mom ahead of time and ask if E was going to be there. If she was, then I would wait until the last possible second before heading out of the door, just so I would make it for the start of dinner and leave right after. I would never make extra time to spend with my mom and grandmother as much as my mom begged for me to come earlier. After dinner, I would drive home. I would drive down the block to spend time with my best friend from high school and her family. I've known them for years, and they make me feel included in their family. One Christmas, I was at Mom's house. We were all opening gifts, and E got furious with Mom because Mom got her a shirt that was a size medium. E screamed at the top of her lungs that she was stupid for not knowing her size. She also accused Mom of calling her fat because she wears a size small. The yelling didn't stop. She kept telling her that since she made the mistake in getting her the wrong size, she needed to go back to the store and get her the right size. I wanted my mom to stand up to her and say something like, well, if it doesn't fit, exchange it yourself. Or if you don't like it, you don't get a gift. But after years of being gaslighted, I could see that Mom had no energy left to fight. The yelling went on for way too long, and I decided to leave. I could see in my mom's eyes that she wanted me to stay, and at the same time, she knew why I wanted to leave. I called my brother the next day and asked, how was Mom after I left? He said he didn't know because the yelling didn't stop and he too had to leave. My mom had over the years shriveled up. She came to the United States as a 16-year-old. She learned the language. She went to school. She got married. She worked. She raised a family. She was someone that any child of an immigrant would be proud of. But her daughter made her look small. Though she still spoke with an accent, E repeatedly called her stupid. Mom was afraid to speak much after that, fearing people would think her accent meant she was dumb. We were always afraid of her blowing up over the smallest inconsequential thing. We always had to walk on eggshells around her. We were told that we had to do what she wanted or she would get angry. Having moved out, I learned that I wasn't going to cater to her. I was always challenging her and she hated it. But I would never forget that she would take it out on Mom later. I didn't live there, so I didn't know what happened later on. The very next morning, it seems Shelley was already forgiven Troy. They're sitting on a couch laughing, and Troy blames Teva's conversation with Shelley that made him hit his wife. Mom Prisa goes out to get breakfast, and Declan goes with her. He asks her, "Why do you keep Troy in the house? If he's so bad, why do you keep him in the house?" She responds, "Believe me, Declan, if it weren't for Mina, I would have kicked him out of the house." There are many reasons why someone chooses to stay. Resources, finances, lack of confidence, the presence of children, shame, or no one would believe them. In 2010, Mom was diagnosed with cancer. I begged Mom to move out. I didn't think being in that situation would help her get well. How can you fight cancer and be constantly yelled at? I told her I would get her an apartment for her and Grandma and I would pay for it. Mom refused. She was concerned that E's son, who was also living there, this was the same reason Prisa didn't want her son, Troy, to be arrested, because her granddaughter wouldn't have a father. Her reaction was to keep the family together. E was unemployed during the entirety of Mom's illness. You would think she had the time to help with driving her to appointments. She never offered and we didn't ask. I remember dropping Mom home after chemo. We're standing in the driveway and she told me how much she appreciated me driving all the way from Rockville to New Carrollton and DC for her treatments during rush hour. And she was glad that E didn't drive her because she would have yelled at her the entire time. The next scene is Declan in the car with his mother and he starts to get the idea that killing Troy was a way to deal with the abuse. The movie goes on to include a violent, vengeful resolution with a twist that I won't give away. But perhaps the biggest twist is that despite the movie's apparent presentation of retributive violence as an option, it's really questioning that and questioning that love is really the only redemptive act option.
Why do you keep Troy in the house?
What do you mean?
I mean, if he's so bad, why do you keep him in the house?
Believe me, Declan, if it weren't for Mina, I would have kicked him out of the house.
Oh, really?
Don't give me that, "oh, really." Of course I would.
And why would you kick him out of the house?
Because he's mean, he's violent, and he scares everybody.
But Mina is stopping you from kicking him out?
No, she's not stopping me. But she needs a dad.
I didn't have a dad. Look at how well I turned out.
And I feel so guilty.
About what? Guilty about what, Mom?
I don't know. Stop asking.
Does anybody like him?
No. Everybody's scared of him.
Even his own daughter.
Yeah.
You don't like him either.
Declan, why do you keep on asking all of these things?
Mom, you can love someone and not like them.
Yeah, okay. I don't like your brother.
Is there anything Troy can do that would make people's lives better?
No. He makes everybody's life worse.
So if he makes everyone's life worse, and nobody... Everybody will miss him. The world would be a better place without him. Why don't we kill Troy?
Declan, that's sick. How would we do it?
It's just really intense.
Here we see Prisa rationalizing the abuse. She believes she's protecting her granddaughter, Mina, but she's really complicit with the abuse. She never really dealt with her husband abusing her. This is another example of brushing things under the carpet. Mom collapsed in her bathroom shortly after completing her last round of chemo. Family rushed to the hospital that first night. I remember being the last person to arrive. My cousin had called asking, "Where are you?" I said, "I'm trying to find her binder." I had put together all her medications, appointments, and procedures in a 3-inch binder. I lugged it with me to all her medical visits. E didn't take her to any appointments. There were multiple visits for radiation and chemo and blood draws. I didn't mind. I valued the precious time that I had with her. So I found the binder and I took it with me to the hospital. When I got there, the attendant ER physician came up to me and said, "Your sister informed us that your mom has skin cancer." My jaw dropped. "Are you talking about the same person?" I said, "No. NK T-cell lymphoma." Here's a binder with all her medical information. I was surprised that Mom had kept information from E, and I suppose E didn't care to know. My jaw dropped again when, during that night, my aunt, my mom's older sister, came up to me after everyone had left, and she asked me, "Did E push her?" And you know what my first thought was? I'll find out. My mom never recovered from that fall, and she passed 8 months after her diagnosis. My grandmother was left in that house with E. I would come by with food and E would throw out the food. I would often call to see if my grandmother was okay because she was 95 years old at the time. One day I called 9 times and I didn't get an answer. I called the police a non-emergency number for a welfare check. 2 officers arrived in 10 minutes and found her walking up a steep hill from the back of the house to get to the front of the house. Because she did not speak English, she couldn't tell them that E had locked her in the basement, and she was trying to get to the front of the house, which she had a key. So the police called me back and said she's fine, and they left. I got a call from my brother sometime after that incident. He said Grandma called him and said come get her. E had thrown a lamp at her, and she no longer felt safe. My brother left his work in the middle of the day and threw all her clothes in large garbage bags, because that's how you pack the quickest way, and he took her to his place. I begged him not to take her back, and if he would keep her safe for the time being, I would find a place for her. Morris and I were living in a 1-bedroom condo at the time. So there's a happy ending. I was able to find assisted living for my grandmother. E visited her once in 5 years. Of course, as soon as she did, I got calls from all the relatives saying, make sure she didn't get any money from Grandma. Anyway, Grandma lived to be 100. I thought some of the best lines in the movie were towards the end. The family talks about carrying their brother. These lines remind me that God carries us in difficult times and that we can carry each other. You know, I'm not someone who's been trained in dealing with domestic violence, but I've learned a few things that I would like to share. The first is, only love is redemptive. What does this mean? To me, it means that even though judgment is due, it offers mercy. The opposite of this is revenge, and the cycle repeats. Second is, don't brush things under the carpet. This applies to both the observer and the victim. Proverbs 31:8-9. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and needy. Be committed. Love is doing what is best for someone, not how you feel or what you think think the right thing is. I believe the best decision for my mom was to walk away from the situation. And sometimes I didn't understand why she couldn't just do that. Love meant that I was committed to her and her decision at the moment. Being committed also means not giving up on someone. God is committed to us. He has promised us over and over that he would never leave us. He would never leave us in our time of need. Isaiah 46:4. Even to our old age and gray hairs, I am he. I am he who will sustain you. I have made you and I will carry you. I will sustain you and I will rescue you. Don't push. There were so many times I wanted to make the decisions for my mom. After a while, I realized it was she who had to make that decision for herself. There's more resolve when the victim makes that decision. Isaiah 1:17, learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow. Thank you for listening to my story. I think we're going to go into, going to go into communion. This is a time where we're all invited to participate in communion. It's the perfect time for quietness and reflection. If you've been stirred up by any of the issues I've talked about today, please reach out to someone on our pastoral staff. You might want to pray with someone at the back or write out a prayer at the stations under Journey and Grow banners and post it in the frames. A team will pray for you during the week. When you're ready, please come and take a piece of gluten-free cracker and some juice. You can eat and drink at the tables at the front or the middle, or you can take it back to your seat, whatever feels most comfortable for you. Also, at this time, you can light a candle as a form of prayer and a symbol of light at the back of the auditorium. You can light a candle or write out a prayer for Ukraine at the table in the back right corner. You can also spend time in reflection at one of the racial justice stations at the front. You might like to make a financial gift and put it in the wooden towers at the back. Sing or just listen to the music. This is a time for us to respond to God in the way we each see fit. So please come forward now and take communion.